This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast that takes a look at the week that was in Bates athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and this week we chat with Bates softball first-year shortstop Ella Marr, who helped propel the Bobcats to their first ever win in the NESCAC tournament. Plus, senior Derek Shen sprinted his way into the history books, and the rowing teams are headed back to the national stage. That's coming up on the Bates Bobcast. On Friday, the Bates softball team defeated Amherst 1-0 in the NESCAC quarterfinals hosted by Tufts University. The Bobcats got five shutout innings from first-year Madison Hollis in the circle, and fellow first-year Delaney Rankin earned the win with two shutout frames out of the bullpen. Meanwhile, rookie Ella Marr shined once again at shortstop, making a number of spectacular plays in the field. And she delivered the eventual game-winning RBI single in the top of the seventh. It's the first win in the NESCAC tournament in Bates softball history, and it came against the defending conference champion and second-seeded Mammoths. The Bobcats fell in the conference semifinals to eventual champion Williams by a score of 2-1, but Marr had another strong game, going 1-for-1 with a run scored and a walk. And Ella Marr is our female Bobcat of the week.
Well, Ella, what a weekend for the Bates softball team. First of all, as a first year, what does it mean to you to, you know, make history and get that first NESCAC tournament win for the program?
I mean, it feels amazing. I actually didn't know that it was our first win in program history, so finding that out was honestly really awesome. And I'm really excited to see what this team does in the coming years, you know, only being a first year, but I'm really, really excited.
And then take us through your at-bat where you got the single to get the run you needed there against Amherst.
Yeah, I was down 0-2 in the count, so I was really just looking to put the ball in play somewhere hard and on the ground. I ended up popping it up, but it found a hole and Kama scored, and it was amazing.
So tell me about, you know, what put, you're from Massachusetts, what first put Bates on your radar for colleges? What made you want to come here?
Yeah, so Caroline Bass actually went to my high school. And my high school coach, when I talked to her about recruiting, she was like, one of our best players here, you know, she went to Bates. I think you should really give it a look. And I did. I did a lot of research on the school, thought it was a good place for me, and reached out to the coach, and now I'm here.
Did you talk to Caroline at all about her experience?
I had texted her a little bit. I never got to play high school with her because she was a little bit older. But she had nothing but awesome things to say about the program. So
you play shortstop. You've made a number of highlight reel plays this year. When did you start playing shortstop kind of growing up? How did that become your position?
I would say I bounced around a lot when I was younger. I think shortstop definitely was like my favorite position. I pitched for a very long time. But I love shortstop because I feel like you're always involved in every play, whether that's, you know, covering a base, getting a cut. But yeah, I love getting dirty. I love how much ground you have to cover. So shortstop was definitely like the position for me.
So of all the highlight reel plays you've made, what's your favorite this year?
That's a good question. I would say there was a ball hit up the middle in the Williams game. And that I dove for and then tagged the bag with my glove. I think that was probably my favorite.
I also love how the team gets really excited about all the defensive plays. What was that like? Have everyone so hyped up like that?
It's amazing. I remember Kama gave me a big hug. She's just been like my biggest hype man, and I try to be that for her as well. So it's really nice having senior leadership as well.
That's a good point because Kama plays third. You're at short. Yeah. You're working together kind of on the left side of the infield. What's that dynamic like?
Kama gets every ball, I swear. She's just like, she like comes up and gets balls that are hit in the middle that I wouldn't have time to make the throw for. She makes some crazy backhanded plays. So having that leadership on the left side of the field with me is just, it's amazing.
I was talking with Kama last week. She said the team really takes pride in the defense this year. How big of a key was that to, I mean, all around for the success, right?
Absolutely. I mean, our pitchers have kept us in a number of games, very low-scoring games. They've been phenomenal all season. And having pitchers as well as defense to back that up has been huge.
And so looking at the Williams game, you had to go up against their ace again. I mean, that's all such a tough matchup. I mean, what's that like from a hitter's perspective? Because I would not want to face her.
Yeah, she... We watched a lot of film back on our games against her. She has very good movement, and I guess the game plan was not to swing at, you know, the pitches above our head, because she definitely got us a lot on those. So I think just, like, being steady in the box, knowing the pitch that you want to hit and waiting for a pitch, you know, lower at the knees and at the belt was really what we were looking for. And I think it definitely worked against her in the game. But sometimes it doesn't go your way.
Well, it was so close, right? Yeah. I mean, and how encouraging is that to see for the team as a first year, to see you not only beat Tufts this year, you beat Williams also and during the regular season, but also hang with the best of the best, right?
That, yeah. I mean, I think that's huge for our team and for this program, just seeing, like, the strides that we've taken this year and sort of seeing where that will lead next year, because I think we have a good group of girls coming in, a lot of returners since we are such a young team. So really excited.
And then, you know, take us back a little bit further. We touched on, you know, you bounced around different positions, sort of. What got you into the sport of softball to begin with? Kind of, did your parents, you know, get into it, or how did that work?
My dad played a little bit of baseball growing up. And also I had a lot of friends that played softball. I started at a pretty young age. Like, I think I was around six. And so I joined a rec league with one of my friends because she had been playing for a little while. And then it kind of went from there.
Looking back on this year, what do you think you'll kind of take away from it, you know, overall, and like most memorable games, you know, and the experience in general?
I'm really proud to be a part of this team. Just looking at where we were in the beginning of the season and where we've come, I think we've given every team a run for their money. Tufts, Williams, I mean, these are two really good teams. So I think we made a lot of noise in this season, and I'm excited to see what we can do next season as well.
Sounds great. Ella Mara, Female Bobcat of the Week, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
In track and field, the Bobcats head to the Open New England Championships over the weekend and turned in a number of impressive performances against teams from all three levels of the NCAA. On the women's side, senior captain Jill Richardson took third in the 5K with a new personal record time of 17 minutes, 4.68 seconds. Meanwhile, junior Chrissy Amon moved into fifth place on the Bates all-time performance list in the 800 meters, placing seventh in 2 minutes, 13.61 seconds. For the men, senior Derek Shen starred for the Bobcats, advancing to the finals in the 100-meter dash with a personal record time of 10.80 seconds. He lowered that time to 10.74 seconds in the final, good for fourth place. And Derek Shen is our male Bobcat of the Week.
Well, Derek, Open New England's a unique experience. You get to compete against, you know, runners from Division I, Division II, all levels. What was that experience like?
It was a fascinating experience, one that I've never experienced, really. It's the largest meet I've been to in terms of just sheer size. There were like 20 plus schools there. Like you said, you know, spans across Division I, II, and III. I got to see big schools like Northeastern, Boston University, Harvard, Dartmouth, these like very impressive athletic schools really compete and sort of see, you know, what their training and what their warm-up, what their routines are like. So it was a great experience all around. I was very fortunate to be able to race very well.
Yeah, I was going to say, on Friday, you qualified for Saturday's final, right? So take us through the qualification, the heats, and when you found out you were fast enough to get into that top eight.
Yeah, Friday definitely was a magical day. So the week leading up to this meet, I just kept telling myself to not expect too much. As, you know, as one of the slowest seeds going into the meet, I was seated at 23rd, out of like maybe 30 runners going into the meet. I knew I couldn't expect that much. I ran a time of 10:88 going into the meet, which is on the dot of the time you need to qualify for the meet, 10.88. So I just really like to not expect too much, to not get too down, to not put too much pressure on myself. That's sort of the mindset I had going into the meet. But at the same time, I just told myself I was not afraid of anyone. I knew I had the capability. I knew I've been improving steadily throughout the season. I knew I have the speed. I just wasn't really, like, I didn't have any fear at the same time. And on race day on Friday, fortunately, some of the really, like, fast people maybe one or two really fast people didn't race. So that was one of the like positive conditions just going into the prelims. And for my heat, I was the last heat. The previous few heats had experienced heat two and three had some headwind. Mm. And for my heat, the headwind stopped, fortunately. So that gave me a big confidence boost going into the blocks, like not feeling wind blowing in my face. And there had been a false start in my heat as well. One of the top seeds false started. So that, again, gave me more confidence. I feel like I can really just compete with any of these guys. And the gun went off, and I hit my drive phase. Took about 12, 13 steps, got up, you know, started moving my levers quickly, and I didn't see anyone around me. That was a really good feeling. Whenever I don't see anyone around me when I'm upright sprinting, I know it's a good sign. And, you know, at the line, I leaned, looked over, didn't, like, I was on par with the top seed, like one of the top seeds. So I knew I had to run a fast time. I went over to the scoreboard, just anxiously waiting for the results to come out. Coach Johnson was there too, just standing there watching the scoreboard. And the results for my heat came out, and I saw a 10.80. And that was a 0.1, a 0.08 PR for me. Yeah. So it was a good time. But I didn't know if I would get in. So we anxiously stood there for another like a couple minutes to wait for the complete results to show up. And then it did, and it said number 7, Derek Shen, or 7 Shen, 10.80, Bates. And I've never seen Coach Johnson that excited. He jumped up, punched the air, and rightfully so, and I was very happy as well because I literally learned that I'm the first male Bates sprinter to qualify for the final at the Open New England Championship. So I think that's a great accomplishment. I'm very proud of it.
Awesome. And then in the final, you had the wind at your back, right? You cut some more time off, but I guess because of the wind, it doesn't necessarily quote unquote count, or how does that work even?
Yeah. So for a qualification purposes, like in the International Athletic Association, the official wind legality limit is 2.0 meters per second to count for like records and so forth. But in college, that goes up to 4.0. So the wind I had behind my back was 3.0 meters per second.
Okay.
So it counts for, you know, qualifications, qualify for nationals and any other meet. And it would go on my account, online track account. Fortunately it's under 4. So yeah, that's good.
Awesome. So, yeah, 10.74, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So take us through the final. I mean, at that point, it's almost all gravy, but, I mean, what were you thinking going in, right?
Yeah. So for the final, I had just ran the 4x1 relay.
That's right.
Right before. So there was an hour turnaround. The 4x1 went pretty smoothly. We had been changing lineups pretty much every week leading up to the meet because some of our guys have been getting sick, injured, and just personnel changes all around. So we were happy with that performance. It was smooth. I had about an hour turnaround to really collect myself before the 100-meter final. So I just lied down in the under the shade, chilled out for a little bit, and then warmed up with like 20 minutes left. My mindset of going to the final was pretty relaxed, honestly, sort of similar to when I ran the 692 indoors. Mm-hmm. I was pretty chill. I was confident. I knew I could run with any of these guys at this point because I had just proven it in the prelims. So I really didn't have that much pressure. I kept it pretty easy, kept it pretty cool. Stepped on the line, gun went off, hit my drive face really hard, got up. Once again, I didn't see anyone around me. The person next to me, I had gone past him already. There was one Northeastern guy who was way ahead, but I knew, you know, they're very talented, gifted athletes, so I sort of just stayed cool, finished my race. I knew, I had to run a fast time because I was with all those top guys. Ran around to the scoreboard, and the scoreboard actually didn't show our times, so we had to go to the finish line, and the officials read it out place by place. That's never happened to me before, so that was pretty cool. So they went like place by place, and when it got to fourth place, they said, fourth place, Derek Shen Bates, 10.74. And, you know, I was ecstatic. You know, that's a super fast time. I had been taking off 0.1 every single meet, essentially. And it's super impressive, and I'm really happy about that. And everyone was really excited for me, so that's a good experience.
Awesome. So what are your thoughts on this Thursday? Because you're
kind of getting approaching the Bates record in the 100. I mean, you know, we'll take another significant drop. I mean, what are your thoughts on this, the final qualifying meet coming up here?
Very excited for this final qualifying meet. It's a good opportunity for myself and Kevin O'Connor, my teammate, to put forth one last fast performance. My teammate Kevin hasn't really ran the 100 meter recently, so this will be his first 100 meter race in a couple weeks. So I'm excited for him. And for me, I think it's reasonable to challenge the Bates 100 meter record. It's quite a legendary record. It's been held. It's been there for 40 years, held by Todd O'Brien, who also holds the 55 meter record. And it's an exciting prospect for me because, you know, I've never challenged such a long record. The 60 record was only like 10 years long. And I think I'm confident that I have a shot at it. And I'm just going to go out there, try really hard, and see if I can get close to it and even beat it. And, I think it's a realistic goal.
Well, the 60 record was a few weeks long because you broke Colby's. That was a wild indoor. But speaking of that, you know, we talked about before how you're a senior, but this is your first outdoor season because you were injured last year. So going from the 60 to the 100, what has that process been like, you know, in terms of, you know, meets and whatnot, you know, in terms of sprinting? Because obviously 40 more meters.
Yeah. You know, I had thought it would just translate directly to the 60 would translate directly to the 100, but in reality, it wasn't the case. It's so technical. The 100 meter is so technical. You can't just be a good athlete, be fast, and sort of rely on your acceleration to finish the race. You need to have a good technical model, a good race model. You need to know how to race well, and really be, you know, fine tuning your technique every day. So I didn't know that. My first race, I opened at 11:28, which is, given my 60 time, really, really like slow and below standard. And I quickly realized, though, I really need to work on the last 40 meters and really get my race in tune. And after that, with the help of my coach, Coach Johnson, my teammate, Colby, Kevin, and the other guys, I was able to fine-tune my technique and drop time meet by meet. I remember I went 11:28 and then 11:02. And then I broke 11, which is a big goal of mine, and it's really impressive. And I was really happy about that. I went 10:94, and then 10:88, and then now 10:80, and then 10:74. Steadily dropping time, dropped half a second over the whole season, which is like a big margin. I could never imagine that going into the season. So definitely very technical. The last 40 meters is definitely nothing to scoff at. It's very crucial 40 meters for sure.
And then the 4x100, you touched on that. When you all were at full strength, you broke the program record in the 4x100. We had Robbie Griffin on that week after you guys did that. But what was that moment like for you to set another school record, this time as a team?
Yes. Great moment for us. Bittersweet, I would say. Bittersweet because that was the NESCAC meet, one of our biggest meets in the outdoor season. And we were beaten by Tufts by just 0.02. They went 42:02, we went 42:04. So while we did break the record and we were very proud of that accomplishment, we were also a little bit bittersweet because we were, you know, right there. If we gotten third, we would have been on NESCAC.
Right.
But all said and done, I'm really proud of this team. And going into the season, I wouldn't have imagined like the bond we would create. I got really close to the guys, Robbie, Kevin, Colby, and myself. We call ourselves the quartet. We always hang out together. We always train together. We really fine-tuned our, you know, stick work. And, you know, from the start of the season, slowly dropping time steadily to 42:00, but beating the record was a big accomplishment for us, and really speaks volume to how hard those other guys worked. And how hard we worked as a collective. So it's a dream come true, like a surreal moment for us. So we're really happy about that.
Excellent. Well, Derek, good luck this Thursday at MIT. It's the final qualifying meet. Hopefully you'll drop some more time, maybe challenge that Bates record. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bobcast.
Thank you.
The rowing teams learned their postseason fate on Tuesday, and both teams qualified for their respective national championship regattas. First up, the Bates women's rowing team will compete at the NCAA championships for the 16th consecutive season after earning an at-large bid on Tuesday. The Bobcats head to the Camden County Boathouse in New Jersey for heats on Friday, May 26th, and finals on Saturday, May 27th. The Bates men's rowing first and second varsity 8 crews are headed to Mercer Lake in West Windsor, New Jersey in early June for the IRA National Championship Regatta, where both will compete in their respective D3 races on the biggest stage of collegiate rowing. Head coach Peter Steenstra reflects on the season so far and the challenges the Bobcats will face starting late next week.
So, Peter, for you, I mean, the women's rowing team, normally automatic qualifier. This year, I had to sweat it out a little bit. What was the maybe experience like having an actual watch party here for the selection show? Luckily, Bates' name came up first.
Yeah, that's when it really pays off to be in alphabetical order. But, no, I mean, I'm behind the curtain a little bit with a few of these things. So I did know a little bit ahead of time. I got some forward notice. But it was a lot of fun for them to see it. And certainly we had it's nice to have a chance to do it here in the team room at the boathouse, and that's pretty cool. And it's a fun way to find out, right?
And the team, I mean, at least since I've been here, this is kind of a rare situation where you're kind of the underdog a little bit going in. Now, what's that like for you as a coach, you know, in terms of making adjustments and trying to surprise some people perhaps?
Yeah, it's a fun place to be.
Yeah.
It certainly is. You get to go into a major regatta, and you're not wondering or second-guessing if you can just maintain where you've been, right? There's a lot of stress when you're going in as the top-ranked crew. All that expectation and build-up, and just ask the Boston Bruins, right? They have a good idea of what this feels like. But, yeah, we've been in that position before, too, and so this has a real we've-got-nothing-to-lose sort of taste to it as we go into it. And we're trying some different things with the lineup, and we're moving a couple of people around, and the entire team is being really open-minded about the whole thing and willing to try some stuff out. And we're just looking for whatever might be lying underneath that last rock. You know, is there a little bit of something that clicks in really easily for us and really makes a boat go? And, you know, I think we're discovering some cool stuff.
You know, when you look at New England's, you look at NIRC's, it seemed like some crews, especially Williams, made some adjustments from one championship to another. What did you notice from some of your competition, perhaps?
It's a NESCAC, so everyone's very well coached.
Yeah.
They're very well prepared, and the coaches that are there know which regatta is the most important one.
Sure.
So when we got to NIRC, we certainly didn't take anything for granted. And if you look at the results from New England's, you'll see that, for instance, the third fastest crew of the day was actually in the third level final, was Trinity. Mm. You know, they had one of the fastest times of the day. Now, how they landed in the third level final, I didn't look back to understand all that. But we knew going in that it wasn't going to be just us and Wellesley and maybe one other trying to battle it out to see who got medals. We knew it was going to be a challenge. So believe it or not, we landed in an appropriate place, and it was the right amount of kick in the tail for us to make us realize, okay, we can't just roll into this thing. We got to make sure we know that we've done everything we can.
And then a little bit about the location of NCAAs this year for the women. It's New Jersey, but it's not where you've been before. So tell us a little bit about where you'll be competing.
Yeah, it's in Cherry Hill, although they have another name, Pensawasson or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've never heard that name before, and I raced there four times. I took probably six or seven crew
I've
teams
seen
12, there.
Four different things.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, but since the last time I was there, they've built a big boathouse, which is there for the entire county there, they dredged it, so it's a whole new piece of water as compared to when I was there last. It's been many years since I've been there. So it's a good race course. It's safe. It's very well protected. Just like anything, if you get that wind right out of the proper direction, you know, straight up or straight down, it's going to pick up like any other place. But in general, it's a nice race course surrounded by, well, you got a whole park on one side, and then you got an 8-lane highway on the other. So it's a nice race course, and I think we'll have a good time there.
And then, so that's NCAAs, that's late May. Then the next weekend, you're at IRAs for the men who qualified today. We found that out via email that they were in. You know, obviously, they're in an underdog situation a little bit also. But the exciting thing is, not only does a 1V have a D3 championship, so is a 2V this year, right?
Yeah. So this is the first year for that second 8 to have an event. It's an interesting event, but you got to start somewhere when you start adding events to these big regattas. But it is 7 boats and it's going to be a 7-boat race for lanes, which is what they do. So we're actually going to have the exact same race with the exact same crews twice.
Right.
So the first race is to just get a proper lane. And then the second time we race, the final itself will be the same 7 boats, but in a different order according to how you finished in the first race. Okay? Sounds a little bit silly, but so much can depend on the weather conditions and which side of the race course you may be on. And it's difficult to accurately rank the crews just because you have bodies coming in and out and all that sort of thing. We need to find the fastest crew on the day, and that's what this is all about. Plus, if we're going to do all this, we might as well get 2 races out of it.
Yeah, certainly. It's interesting. Are the lanes for the initial race 4 lanes then chosen randomly?
Not chosen randomly. They are ranked
Okay. Based
on previous
okay.
Right? Yeah. Based on previous results. But you know, by racing on the day and then setting everyone up for the most accurate and proper final race the next day, that's what this is about.
Gotcha. And so, you know, today you were working mostly with the men. You seem to alternate a little bit. So how do you balance it from a head coach, you know, training 2 teams for national-level competition within a week of each other?
I depend very heavily upon the assistant coaches. Yeah. So, you know, Kian and Carly both know what they're doing. And when Carly and I take off on Tuesday to go take the trailer down and get everything set up for when the women's team arrives on Wednesday, you know, Kian is here running the guys for that week that I'm away. He's more than capable, and in fact, this is where he really shines at times like this, because what he knows is training of the boats, coaching the boats, and prepping them for that final race. And so I have no problem at all taking off for a week, because I can have a quick phone call and just ask how it went, or he might send me a quick video clip and I can take a look at it from afar. But he's more than capable of preparing the crews for championship time.
Great. Well, I guess last question. You often compared rowing to chopping wood, just being repetitive. And so what's, you know, give me a little more creativity, though, in the chopping of the wood to prepare for this?
Let's just say we're going to sharpen the axe. How about that?
Sounds like a plan.
All right.
Peter Schienzer, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Next time on the Bates Bobcast, we'll recap the MIT final qualifying meet for track and field, and take a look back on the women's soccer team's trip earlier this spring to Iceland. All that and more next time on the Bates Bobcast. Bates, Bates, my